you like scary movies? What's your favorite scary movie? Oh, sorry, wrong film, but a bloody good question. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special episode of the Empire Podcast, brought to you in association with our lovely and talented chums at Sky Cinema, the only place that brings you a brand new premiere every day. Every single day. That noise you can hear? That's a new premiere being added to Sky Cinema. It's true. And once again, we've convened a very special and talented pod crew for a short series of podcast debates, or pod debates, if you will. And in time for the scariest night of the year, and to coincide with the launch of Sky Cinema's spooktacular, they asked me to say that, Halloween collection, we will be asking, is Halloween the scariest movie of all time? Oh. And if not, what is? And joining me to do a deep dive into this most terrifying of topics are three of the scariest people I know, and I say that with love. Deep, deep love. First up is a man who reminds me of Michael Myers. He is single-minded to purpose. Mm-hmm. He is relentless in pursuit of his goals. And he's wearing an inside-out William Shatner mask for some weird reason. Please welcome the face, voice, and the devil's eyes. The blackest eyes of Alex Sane.
Thank you very much, Chris. There is nothing left. No reason. No conscience. No understanding. I am pure evil. Hello.
Welcome. How are you?
Yeah, very well, Chris. Thank you for having me. Lovely to be here.
Do you like a nice bit of pure evil on a Tuesday morning? Really helps the cornflakes go down. All right, next up is the host of Absolute Radio's breakfast show, a man as famous for his razor-sharp wit as his trademark razor-sharp fingers and green and red striped jumper and signature jingle. I don't know if you know this, it's quite famous.
One, two, Barry's coming for you. Three, four.
After the news and weather, it's Dave Berry.
Thank you very much indeed, Chris. Look at my top note. I was going to sing in my introduction. One, two. I was going to go for Davey's coming for you. I don't know. Does that put us under great minds think alike?
Or fools really differing. Let's go for
great
the first one.
Great to be here.
How are you, man? You good?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Last but not least is our very own geek scream queen, our very own final girl. If you want to make it out alive with this podcast, never ever go on a trip with her to a log cabin because bad shit will happen to you. You will be stabbed through the chest with an arrowhead whilst in flagrante. She'll just sail through serenely to decapitate the baddie on a beach. Weirdly specific, but welcome, Helen O'Hara.
You
all right?
You know, I just feel like sometimes it needs to be done. Sometimes you need to go to the beach for a quick decapitation.
A quick?
Yeah.
Just lop one off.
Someone said it.
Lop one off the neck. They frown upon that sort of thing in Bournemouth.
Although we're not talking about it, beaches I found terrifying after watching. Did you ever see Blood Beach, the Jaws ripoff where the thing lived under the sand?
Yes.
That scared the crap out of me. Like, I was terrified enough of the sea after Jaws, and then I couldn't even go on a beach because of the monster that lived under there.
Yeah.
Good thing you never saw the promenade killer close to the coast.
The candy floss evil.
Gradually moving further and further inland.
The mountain murders.
Until you end up in Milton Keynes, and nobody wants that. With all due respect, of course, to Milton Keynes and its residents. Anyway, so now the intros are out of the way. I think that's all the time we have.
Fantastic.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Been a pleasure.
Let's get the big question out of the way. Alex, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Is Halloween the scariest film of all time?
I'm going to say no, but look, listen, I watched Halloween when I was a teenager, as I'm sure a lot of us did, on a VHS. I did a double bill of Halloween and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yes.
Because I really wanted to screw myself up. And I do think Halloween is a phenomenal, stripped back, bare, pure slice, 1 hour, 30 minutes of terror. I think it's a fantastic film. I think Michael Myers is the grandfather of the modern slasher. And I do think it's terrifying. Is it the scariest movie? No, but at the time, man, it was the shape, this relentless, faceless thing that just constantly moved forward. And it wasn't Freddy Krueger. I hadn't seen Freddy Krueger. Maybe I had, but it wasn't this wisecracking killer. And it wasn't the silliness of Jason Voorhees at that point, which obviously, you know, Jason's great, but he's no Michael Myers. It was the fact that it moved so slowly. And although I said it at the start, there's so little character development for him. He is just this blank canvas that you paint your own fears onto. And when Sam Loomis, Dr. Sam Loomis, I love Donald Pleasance in this.
Jeez, did that guy ever have hair?
Is that a direct quote from Halloween?
It's
Dave, have you seen this movie?
It's the one with the hoverboard, right?
It's Michael Myers' only line.
Jeez, did that guy ever have hair?
It's all muffled because of the mask.
But seriously, I did it at the start, but the bit where he goes, there was nothing left, no reason, no conscience, no understanding, pure evil. And that is all you get about Michael Myers for this movie. And I think that's fantastic. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant boogeyman.
I would say as well, I don't think that Halloween is the scariest movie of all time, but another thing which it does, which is terrifying, is that the bits where he's hiding in the shadows, like so many horror films have given us, kind of comes in the last 15 minutes of the hour and a half. It's just the fact that he's in broad daylight. He stood outside her school behind the car, you know, in the kind of overalls and the mask, just staring. And there's something chilling about that, that this isn't a creature hiding in the shadows. As you say, he's relentlessly moving forward. The other scary thing about this movie, because I rewatched it in preparation for the podcast, is Jamie Lee Curtis's character, even though she's been stalked at this point for some time, decides to smoke some weed. That is the last thing that you should do, Jamie Lee Curtis. If you feel like you're being stalked by a man in dungarees, don't get high.
Dungarees, it's a boiler suit. I literally want to go on record. This film would not work if Michael Myers was in dungarees.
But it won't be for Chucky.
And backwards baseball cap. Are you sure you've seen this film, Dan?
I have seen this film.
Okay,
but
good.
That's what I mean is, why would you want to be...
I hate manure!
Why would you want to be stoned?
Do you know what? I think that's a legitimate point, as is the fact that she keeps reassuring the kid that she's babysitting that there's definitely no bogeyman, when she's literally been complaining about it earlier in the day. She's literally been complaining about the scary man looking at her.
Yeah.
All day.
Little Tommy Doyle, who went on to be played by Paul Rudd Halloween 6, and they wanted to get him back for the sequel, Halloween Kills, and I think he can't do it because he's doing Ghostbusters, but that would have been great.
Make some time in your schedule, Rudd, for God's sake.
I know, right?
I mean, he's probably just de-aged too much. He doesn't work for sequels, does he? He's getting younger.
He's going to be the child again.
Yeah, you don't look 6 anymore, Paul Rudd. You look 4, so we can't cast you, sadly.
But no, I think if it isn't the scariest, it'll do till scary gets here. I mean, it isn't probably the scariest one for me, but it definitely did the job the first time I saw it. That said, I watched it again this weekend and I sat there nitpicking, and I don't know why I did. But I was literally sitting there going, okay, so the bit outside the classroom.
What were you nitpicking?
Okay, the bit outside the classroom.
Where
right?
he's just standing, staring from across
staring
the road,
at her.
Yeah.
And then the teacher asks her a question. By the time she's finished answering the question, which is perhaps 15 seconds, let's be generous, I don't think it's even that long, he has gotten into the car, started it up, and driven out of frame.
Yeah.
I mean, he has to hustle, is what I'm saying. And I want to see the version of one of these films where you see the scary man go from staring implacably to, like, running around the back of the house.
Someone fleeing in dungarees really ruins a horror movie.
But this is the best thing about Michael Myers. Apart from his dungarees, it's the fact that he is not... It's never clear, like, whether he is a very resilient human man or he is this supernatural... force. The idea that he gets shot, I think, 6 times by Sam Loomis at the end, falls out of the window, and then has disappeared. Just walks off. But it's like, then you hear him breathing at the end.
Yeah, the breathing is...
Well, you know why? Because he's just out of breath, having run around the corner. He's like...
Where did I park my car?
You're right, because there's a bit where he's hiding behind the hedge as well.
Yes, on the first and he has to run around the back of the house.
Yeah.
I do think I learned a lot of bad lessons from this movie. I really did buy into this whole Puritan kind of ethos that John Carpenter forced on us. I became very nervous about ever being the guy at a party who would kiss a girl. That's my reason! Because
what was their reasons?
Because, like, this
they'd
whole...
seen Halloween 2, obviously.
This whole idea that, you know, he... although he has denied it forever, he's gone, I really wasn't trying to make a statement about promiscuity or anything. Mm. The fact that it is everyone who has sex and smokes weed gets killed, and the virgin Laurie Strode is the only one who actually survives, because she doesn't do anything bad. She's a good girl. You'll get to live.
Yeah, and she
stabs him with knitting needles, and there's nothing more middle class and,
there is nothing
anti-authoritarian
than that. Yeah. It, or anything that says celibacy more. No disrespect to knitters. Actually, there are quite a lot of very cool knitters out there. Oh, God.
That might have been the reason at the parties there.
Just have to pick up my seven cats to get to my knitting needles.
But seriously, Michael Myers, there's something very primal and very brutal. It's before the kills became a kind of showpiece for these slasher movies. And it was like, what's going to be the unique way in which someone gets killed? Him, it's just a knife and stabbing, and it's very brutal. And, you know, I mean, later on, I do like the fact that he birthed Jason Voorhees in some way, and then we get Jason Voorhees doing crazy stuff like in Friday the 13th, part 8, I want to say, Jason Takes Manhattan, where he literally punches a man's head off his body in one punch. Or the fantastic Jason X, where he dips the girl's head in the liquid nitrogen, pulls it out, and then smashes it into a billion pieces.
Oh, yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, but that's what you eventually get to. You were like, wow, I want it to be even bigger, the kill.
Because it always has to be escalation, doesn't it?
I think that's what actually happened with the most recent Halloween. So it's clear that we're talking about John Carpenter's Halloween, which came out in 1978, and there are two other movies called Halloween, just really confusingly. There is the Rob Zombie remake, which...
Right.
Yeah.
It's probably not worthy of discussion, I would say. And then there's the most recent one, which is a sequel directed by David Gordon Green, which has Jamie Lee Curtis returning and Michael Myers back again, even though he had his head cut off by her at the end of Halloween H2O. It's all very confusing.
We're not counting that one,
We're not counting that. It's been retconned.
Yeah. So this picks up after the original Halloween, and I'm so pleased you called it Halloween H2O, because I genuinely think that is the worst title for a movie ever, because it's Halloween H20, surely, because it's referencing the fact that it's 20 years since the original, and yet you always read H2O as water.
Always.
And you're making these weird connections, like, sorry, was Michael Myers something to do with the sea?
The boiler suit's quite Thames water, I thought. So.
You should see their new uniform. It's dungarees.
And a William Shatner mask.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the new one is very enjoyable indeed. Yeah. I like the fact that, although he's only in it partially, but the fact that they brought Nick Castle back, the original Michael Myers from the first movie, is great. Because in the first movie, the only direction in the original John Carpenter one that John Carpenter ever gave him, other than walk from here to here, don't act, was when he kills Bob and he goes, I want you to tilt your head like you're looking at a butterfly collection. And that bit speaks volumes about Michael Myers. That's a bit of characterization we get.
That bit is really creepy. I had questions, though, about Mike Myers as well. This is one
Mike
of the
Myers.
Things... Sorry.
Groovy, Michael, baby.
Michael Myers. Like, so he's been imprisoned or incarcerated since he was six?
Six, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
First of all, that kid looks more than six, but okay. He's been incarcerated since he was six. He hasn't said a word during that time.
Yep.
And yet his doctor has decided he's like super pure evil. There's no question about it.
Because he looked into his eyes and saw the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes.
Like a shark's eyes.
Yeah. But also, like, has he killed people inside? Where has he genuinely, where has he learned to kill? Where has he learned how strong he is compared to other people? Where has he learned what he can do? I genuinely wondered.
I thought that was a nice scene in the most recent movie where you see him kind of shackled and he's got his own amount of square footage around him that he can operate within. I think that was a really nice way of setting
really
up that
creepy.
We're dealing with a dangerous, dangerous guy.
Good. I wondered, and I still wonder now, whether or not we see just a little too much of the side of his head, because the camera sort of gives you a little bit. We've never really seen him, apart from when he is a very cute kid, the original. He is
in that little outfit.
He's so cute. Yeah,
adorable.
I mean, like, what happened?
Hello, Michael. Hello.
But in this, when the camera just sort of reveals the side of his face, and you can see he's got this sort of grizzled beard and it's greying, and I genuinely went, he looks like he could be an Ice Road Truckers, and I didn't like that.
Those men could mess you up. I mean, they are big tough.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They are. Yeah. But I do think.
What have you got against the Ice Road Truckers, Alex?
Nothing. I just think most of them have killed. So,
do they wear dungarees? I think they do.
Don't we all at some stage?
But it's that thing, isn't it, with these two journalists? Two things. First of all, have you ever met two characters that turned up in a slasher movie that have dead meat written on their heads more than these two arseholes? And B, isn't it amazing that you can go, we're making a podcast. Can we come to a secure mental institution?
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that.
I mean, in fairness, look around the room right now. It's pretty much the case.
Yeah, it's true.
Are we all imagining outside this door?
Yes.
Will they actually let us out when we're done?
They're of course I went and got a coffee.
They're the worst podcasters in history as well, because they turn up to interview Jamie Lee Curtis halfway through the film. We may have gone off the beaten track here, but when they turn up to interview Jamie Lee Curtis halfway through the film, they put their recording equipment like 15 feet away from her.
Yeah.
And they just go, yeah, that'll do. And how much do you want? $3,000? Yeah, there you go, have it. That's all we've got. How many podcasters walk around with that sort of money on them?
Yeah.
Who records from over there? I mean, they're dead. They'll never get to hear it, but that sound quality is going to be bad.
It's going to be terrible.
Shall we all get our wallets out? So there is a funny bit about those two journalists turning up to interview Michael Myers, because John Carpenter in the original, he got the idea for that cute kid with a vacant stare from actually visiting a mental institute and seeing a kid there when he was researching the original Halloween. He saw a kid there who had this blank stare, and that was what inspired that really weird shot where they sort of, the parents freeze. And they're just holding the mask and the camera pulls out slowly. And you're like,
yeah,
okay.
It's a weird shot that, because you've got, so the kid is just, he almost looks more traumatized to me in that moment than he maybe should. But you've got the dad sort of bending down going, what's up, Michael? Why are you holding a bloody knife? and you've got the mum sort of standing there with her hands in her pockets like, ugh.
Classic Michael.
When he says a bloody knife, he means a knife covered in blood. Yeah. Not a bloody knife?
Yeah, where'd bloody you get knife? That?
You've been in the kitchen drawers, Michael.
And that's that's a cool origin story. I didn't actually know that. But have you guys heard the one of the reasons why Wes Craven came up with Nightmare on Elm Street? So he'd read about a sleep study in Korea where kids were actually dying, a study in sleep deprivation. But also as a kid, one night he was in his home, his childhood home, and he heard a noise outside and he looked out the window and there was this guy in a red and green striped jumper shuffling along the street. And he stopped and just looked up and looked at Wes Craven, directly at him. And then Wes Craven looked away and looked back again. The guy was coming closer. And then he was trying the door of his house as well.
Oh my god!
So that stayed with him as it would.
Well, it's going to stay with me as well. Now,
the way you told that,
yeah, Dave,
I know that. I know that he named. Which I don't know. Are you allowed to do that? Because I'm sure they put on the bottom at the end of credits. It's like, this movie is entirely based on fictional people. It's not meant to represent anyone in reality. He named Freddy Krueger after the kid who used to bully him at school called Fred Krueger. It's not even clever. It's like, I'll add D-Y to Fred Krueger. It's nothing to do with you, Fred, you dick.
The opposite, of course, of what Alex has just said, which I've noticed with horror films, is we can make this podcast 1,000 times more scary by just saying, this podcast is based on a true story. And we're already 1,000 times more scary than we were at the beginning.
And we were pretty damn scary, yeah, to begin with.
But Nightmare on Elm Street, I will say, in preparation for this podcast, it is still to date the only film terrifying. I haven't rewatched. I couldn't rewatch it. Because the one scene, obviously, I think we can talk about a lot of these movies with a good horror movie will burn one image from it onto your brain forever. Uh-huh. And for me, obviously, it's that iconic moment where Johnny Depp explodes out of his mattress. And I remember being an idiot as a kid going, how on earth did they do that? And then realizing they sellotape the bed to a ceiling. But like that whole
sellotape? Is that what they use?
I don't work on movies. I don't work on movies. I'm not a props guy. I don't know. But I couldn't even. I went to look at it last night on YouTube and I couldn't bring myself to watch it because it would bring back so many memories. The idea of Freddy Krueger is one of the most inspired horror ideas ever, because as a kid, when you watch these terrifying movies, the one release you have is like, when I fall asleep, I'll wake up and it'll be the new day, it'll be a morning, I'll have forgotten the nightmare I just lived through. And that goes, you're in bed, you're about to fall asleep, that's when he gets you.
Yeah,
well, a film that I have in common with your esteemed colleague Terry, and she loves it as well, is Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Oh, Dream Warriors.
Dream Warriors.
Yes.
And it's set in the psychiatric hospital for children, and I think one of my, you talk about those things that get emblazoned on your mind, the bit where Freddy decides to use the kid as like a string puppet
with his
veins.
Yeah.
And he walks him up to the top of the building and it looks like he's committing suicide, but Freddy's controlling him through, as I say, like his veins are strings.
That's a moment
that Terry and I spoke about, and it's, I can still
hard
see
pass.
That now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hard pass. Yeah. I'm a big horror film guy. I can watch all sorts of gore and gru, but anything to do with veins, I'm in all sorts of trouble. So that bit has always fucked me up in Dream Warriors. Great film, though.
One of the first clips I ever saw of Freddy Krueger was him throwing somebody over his head into a furnace. Just very casually, kind of.
Wow.
Because it can.
Yeah, and I genuinely, that freaked me out for a long time.
It's the funny thing with Freddie is, and this may say a lot about me, but he was one of the few posters I had on my bedroom wall as a kid growing up.
Why?
Genuinely.
Are you okay?
I had Clint Eastwood in Heartbreak Ridge because a local video shop gave it to me. I had Freddy Krueger and I had Wayne's World. They were the only three things. Oh, and wow. An Ewok that the Star Wars fan club sent me. Thanks. I don't want Han or anything. But
which Ewok?
That was...
Was it, Chief
it was Warwick Davis. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah. But my thing is that there was a time, and I think it was just after Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors, where Freddy became, he kind of jumped the shark on regular occasions and then threw it in a furnace.
Yeah.
And he became a kind of almost like one of the Simpsons.
He does become like this... I love like Freddy Krueger now, although I still won't rewatch it. But even in Nightmare on Elm Street 2, which is actually a very good film, he's already become this character in his own right, this very chatty guy. Because he's not that in the first one. But by the second one already, he's like, how you doing, kids? I'm going to kill you. Freddy's here.
It's pretty good. Chilling. Yeah, I love those movies as well, up to a point. The point where they become terrible. That's the point where I don't like them. But they do speak to escalation as well. You know, because Dream Warriors is crazy and over the top, and what came next? What came the Dream Child and all that sort of stuff. And it was that's kind of what happened with the Halloween remake or the reboot / sequel that David Gordon Green did. We're talking about Michael Myers' capabilities. And there's a point in the new Halloween where he literally stomps in someone's head. That's how strong he is. And there seems to be a point in these movies once they become franchises where the filmmakers just have to keep trying to top themselves
Yeah, I think that's a real danger, particularly in horror franchises. Like the push to always be bigger, always be scarier, always be more violent, gorier, just can kind of deform these movies into something completely different. And I think the only way to try and avoid that is what I think Alien tried to do, which is you've got essentially, at least they tried to have essentially completely new genre or a new twist on a genre every single time, because that's the only way that you avoid getting in an arms race with yourself, essentially.
Yeah. Just throwing more aliens and more guns at the situation isn't going to make a better film.
They made an action movie, not a slasher movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the second one is an action movie. The third one tries to do something a bit weirder and
kind of
different.
Gothic horror sort of thing,
But a lot more goth. And then, the fourth one, again, tries to get a whole kind of moral aspect in there with the whole experimentation on prisoners and that kind of issue. So they're trying to bring something new to it and not just be like, this time more aliens and their blood's even more acid.
There's a really, I don't know whether this story is true. However, because I've never found anywhere online which says it, but someone did tell me that apparently when James Cameron pitched Aliens to Fox, he walked into a room and he wrote Alien. And then he put an S on the end and drew two dollar signs, like threw it, turning it into a dollar sign, and was like, "Huh?" And they're like, "We're in, James."
Did they think that was the name of the film for the longest time? We can't wait for Aliens $$. It's gonna be great. But there is a kind of a disconcerting pattern in horror movies, not just the escalation of kills and the focus on the kills. One of my favorite horror movie series, or one of my favorite horror movies, is The Omen. And Omen 2, that has kills in it, really interesting kills. I'm sure everyone remembers David Warner, spoiler alert, being decapitated by the pane of glass. Mm-hmm. And that got such a reaction. It's filmed from 17 different angles, like it's a goal in the World Cup final. They just really went for it. And that got such a big reaction that Omen 2, which is still a good film, turned into a kind of compendium of really inventive kills. People get their eyes picked out by ravens. There's a guy who gets sliced in half by something that falls through a lift shaft. Great kill, but the film itself becomes diminished. There's also a tendency, I think, to turn the bad guys of these movies into the heroes.
Into the heroes,
eventually.
Yes. This is something I've been complaining about for years to you, Chris. You know this. But like when you get to a point where even the velociraptors in Jurassic Park become the good guys.
That's such a good point.
Blue, look at me. Blue.
Really? When you get
a bit
to
of cheese
point,
on a cracker.
we're not only meant to have sympathy with Darth Vader, we're also meant to have sympathy with Hannibal Lecter, who lost a sister in childhood. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, it gets ridiculous. You let bad guys be bad guys sometimes.
Which, I mean, to a lesser degree, but I think in the same breath, it's why the Halloween 2018 remake actually retcons this whole Michael Myers being related to Laurie Strode. Mm. Because in the sequel, the original's sequel, 1981, that's in the very first film, she's just a babysitter who accidentally crosses his path. But in the sequel, it's revealed that she's his younger sister. And they've got rid of that. And I do think that's quite a good thing, because it removes that purpose to Michael. Like there is some sort of familial relationship he has that is driving him to kill her, and also opens it back out that he's back killing anyone. Any of us, we're all possibly at risk,
yeah.
as opposed to him hunting someone for a reason.
Yeah, there's nothing scarier than the unknowable and not knowing why the hell he is after. Well, actually, in the new one, he's not really after. He just kind of happens upon her because she's hunting him down. But he's just he's drawn back to Haddonfield, and he's just basically going to kill indiscriminately and relentlessly. And he's implacable. He is like a zombie in many ways, one of the slow-moving Romero zombies. And he will get you no matter what you do, no matter where you go.
So many
terrifying.
Podcasters.
Everyone's got a podcast these days.
I'm slaying some of them.
That would be funny. That would be funny if he was just doing podcasters. Like there was a scene with him on the iTunes podcast list going, who do I hate most?
Have you been reading my film pitch idea?
who has a one-star review?
Can we please not put this idea in people's heads? Thanks.
Would you love to hear the Michael Myers podcast? And his special guest is Jason Voorhees, and it's just an hour of silence.
With
an ice jingle at the beginning.
Would there be some breathing sound?
There might be some breathing.
Freddy Krueger's the comedy sidekick. Phones every now and again for a witty one-liner.
Where are you from, Wisconsin? Make that happen. Make it happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
yeah,
the scariest movie of all time is not Halloween.
No.
What is it, Helen O'Hara?
You know, it might be Alien. I mean, it's not my favorite of even the Alien franchise. I am more of an Aliens girl.
Me too.
And there are other films. There are other probably horror films that I love more, like The Thing. I think is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
But in terms of just pure scariness, I think Alien has got to be pretty high, just because you know you're trapped in a space. Outside is literal guaranteed 100% death. Immediately.
I can survive.
And inside is literal 100% guaranteed death, probably. Mm-hmm. So it's not a good situation, is what I'm saying.
Mm. All right, yep.
I agree that Alien is very scary. Weirdly, it was much later that I found one of the scenes that Ridley Scott excised from the original cut truly upsetting, which is the bit where you see a part of the alien life cycle that we've never seen before, where she opens a door and she sees Dallas, one of the other crew members, and they're being metamorphosized into the eggs, and they're actually turning slowly into the eggs that will hold the facehuggers. And it's kind of upsetting in this weird, because they're alive, but it's not like they're waiting for a chest burster. They're slowly, organically turning into an alien egg. And it's only in the director's cut, but it's really like, oh, what a way to go.
Ugh, nasty.
It's not good. I bet there's no good way
to
go.
There's no good way to go.
Have you ever seen in Aliens, talking about Aliens, I found, this is only recently where I found Burke's death, like, online somewhere. Like, I'd never seen Burke's death because he's always been that sort what happens to Burke? And there's a scene that James Cameron didn't even put in the director's cut when she's looking for Newt, and she finds Burke strapped up like a colonist, and he's like, help me, help me. And she's like, I can't help you. You're a goner. And she gives him a grenade or drops a grenade, and poof, that's the end of Burke, which is great to actually finally get some closure on that.
Yeah.
But the reason James Cameron didn't put it in is because he was so respectful of the timeline between when someone is implanted with a facehugger implants someone, and how long it takes for the chest burst to come out, and it would have been too quick in Burke's timeline for that to be included.
One of the other sad things about the death of Burke was my much beloved American sitcom from the late 1980s just became called My Dad.
Yeah. It's just not as
that was a really dark ending to season 4, wasn't it?
Like all great horror franchises, it ended up in space.
My other dad just rolled a grenade towards him.
Dad!
What are you doing?
But you are right. When you were saying the horror franchises, just like they get bigger and bigger, and it becomes like, how ridiculous can we make it? Like Leprechaun 4, is it? Where he goes to space?
It really ruins the sanctity of the Leprechaun franchise.
Bad example.
I didn't know that. Is that true? Yeah. There's a fourth Leprechaun movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't it Leprechaun in Da Hood as well? All sorts of. Yeah.
My goodness.
But it is. It's turning the monster into the star. But then I guess the monster is the draw. I mean, you just really like look at the victims as people who are going to be killed in gradually more and more extreme ways.
It's like rereading Game of Thrones, right? You can't reread Game of Thrones because you go back and it's all written from the point of view of people who you know are about to die. And it's really hard to invest in these books because you're like, Well, you're dead. Oh, you're dead. I can skip that chapter.
I fundamentally agree. I'm honestly, it's a bit off piece, but this is why I don't think anyone really wanted a solo movie, because we had literally just seen that character die at the hands of his son. Spoiler.
I think people may have seen The Force Awakens by now. Yeah, I think we're good.
In The Force Awakens. And at what point, having seen that death, do you then go, I'd love to see the same character as a cheeky chappy running around the Empire.
With his whole life ahead of him.
Causing hijinks, surviving, getting the better of the enemy, when you go, you die on a gantry at the hands of your son, so this is depressing.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I do get that. I get the urge, because you've got this established monster that people invest in and love and have posters of, apparently, on their wall.
Thank you.
But that's why you have to make us care about the victims, and you have to give them enough to do, and you have to actually, against all odds, convince us that they might not die this time.
And that's why I actually am drawn to films like the original Halloween, where we spend more time and we get to know Laurie Strode.
Yeah.
And even some of the later Friday the 13th movies, there is a hero who develops and rises, Tommy Jarvis from Friday the 13th 4 on through 6, played by three different people in three different movies. but we get you get to identify with him. And it's not the scariest horror movie of all time, but I couldn't possibly let this go without mentioning Evil Dead 2, which is, of course, as we all know, the greatest movie of all time. And that is entirely based around its hero. And it's one of the few horror franchises to create a hero and someone that it's a focal point of a franchise rather than the evil zombie dead.
Well, there are things like Ash Scream. There are things like Scream as well, which have a final girl who is the hero fighting all the bad guys. Yeah. But I think Scream is also a good example of getting people to invest in all of your secondary characters.
Scream's a great example.
Spending enough time with them.
Yeah. Scream 2, the death of Randy in Scream 2 is heartbreaking.
I'm still not over that.
Not over it.
I am never going to forgive them for that.
Yeah.
And The Thing as well, another great example. Want those characters to survive. They are great characters.
That's true. It's true. I do 100% agree with that. And I do think Scream is worth noting because Matthew Lillard's in it, who is amazing in everything.
He is incredible.
I love Matthew Lillard. I just, any opportunity to go, Matthew Lillard, did someone mention him? No, well, I am.
Have you heard Chris's fantastic pitch?
What?
Oh, yeah. So, so it's an idea for a film called Lizard in a Blizzard, and it stars Matthew Lillard and Fred Willard as two garbage disposal men called Donnie Lonnie and Lonnie Donnie, and they have to track down a priceless lizard that gets lost in a blizzard in New York City. And I've only got past the first 5 pages so far, but it's going to be really good.
It's going to be
great. Draw a couple of lines through that S. Let's get this right. I am so getting Dave, my wallet out right now, again, for the second time. How much do you need? I'm in.
I need all of it. Basically, whatever you've got.
I'm here to ask for £100,000 of your money for 5% of my film business, Lizard in a Blizzard. I really wanted you, Deborah, but...
As one of your major investors, however, I'm going to require that it's my lizard that plays the lizard.
Okay, listen, I'm fully on board. We shouldn't have done this podcast now. We should do it in 10 years' time when Lizard in a Blizzard has become a reality and we can really answer the question, what is the scariest film of all time? It's that film that made Alexander and Dave Berry go bankrupt. It's that one.
Can we do another podcast, please, Chris? Whatever you've got, just give me just enough money for a coffee, I'll be here.
We've definitely done Batman, haven't we? Have we done Batman? I've got more on Batman.
So we've been talking about classic horror movies, though. I mean, I think we should touch on this modern crop of horror movies because they are a mixed bag. But I do think there are some movies in there that were we kids, we would find some terror in. Because in preparation for this, I watched Insidious: The Last Key, and I love the first Insidious movie, and I do think. First of all, in Insidious The Last Key, I do think thank goodness for Lin Shaye, because she's great in it.
Yeah.
She's so good. And it also does that thing which the Halloween remake does, which is add a bit of comedy with Tucker and Specs, the two comedy ghost hunters. And I mean, it's done better in the new Halloween, but that idea of putting an audience at ease and making them relax with some comedy, as long as it's not at the expense of the horror, and the horror is still frightening. You're not making a comedy horror, you're making a horror with some funny bits. The audience gets off their guard, and when the actual murder starts or something terrifying happens, you are more scared than if you were sitting there on edge waiting for it to happen.
Yeah.
And it also has a really good moment, although the villain in it is called Keyface, which is just too close to Taserface for me.
Or a guy called Keith Ace, who's a tennis instructor in
or the bass player in a band that never quite made it.
Hey guys,
I'm on the keytar. It's Key Face.
What? You mean we didn't get the contract? I'm gonna do some murders. I do think it does that thing that Nightmare on Elm Street does, which is when you apply dream logic to reality. I think that's one of the scariest tropes in horror. And there's a bit where Keith Ace, basically, the girl is screaming and it has fingers for keys and it just reaches into her throat with a key and turns the key and turns off her scream.
Oh,
and it's that thing where you're like, that's dream logic, like where you're in a dream and you're screaming and no sound's coming out. Yeah. And that moment I was like, that's good.
That's a scary bit. That is a scary bit.
It is good. Yeah. I actually really like the Insidious movies and how batshit insane they are with the idea the further Insidious, the way Insidious Chapter 2 folds back in itself and becomes a kind of Back to the Future Part 2 thing where it's in the original movie as well. Oh, it's good stuff.
Yeah, there's some really clever stuff going on in those movies, I think. I think they're, if anything, underrated.
And you've got the new Blumhouse crop of horror movies, the likes of Get Out and Us and the Conjuring films as well. And you know, and things like The Witch and It Follows and Ari Aster, The Rise of Him with Midsommar and The Babadook.
Oh my gosh. Top of my list on my phone. I absolutely love that movie.
Yeah.
And Get Out as well is such a fantastic film. That the bit in that where he goes upstairs and the whole kind of dinner party hushes down. And they all look up and they listen to him kind of creaking around.
Yeah.
Now, that's genuinely scary on many levels.
4.5, just go on about Blumhouse, but $4.5 million that cost. And their model is impeccable.
Their model is incredible.
Idea of making horrors at $10 million or less that then go on to undoubtedly make a profit. And I think I'm right in saying, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I read an interview with Jason Blum where he was saying that the Get Out script had been through numerous studios before it came to him, and it was budgeted so high no one would take it. They were like, we just can't do it. So he worked with the filmmakers, I'm sure he worked with Jordan Peele, to basically strip it back and go, what can we take out to bring down the budget and turn this into something that we can greenlight because it will certainly make a profit because it's budgeted so low.
Absolutely.
That's the key. And that allows them then the freedom to actually, you know, take a risk on something like Get Out, which, you know, no one had ever done before. And I think that's brilliant. But even stuff, you know, even just classic scary stuff like Annabelle.
Yes.
Scary doll. I mean, that's perennial. Yeah. Who isn't going to be scared by that?
So before I ask you guys specifically for your scariest films of all time, what sort of scares are you drawn to? Are you drawn to a succession of short, sharp shocks, lots of jump scares, things leaping out at you from the edge of the frame? Or do you like the films that kind of stay with you and invade your mind and keep you awake at 3 a.m, like The Exorcism of Emily Rose did to me? Because there's a whole thing in that movie about how evil is most active at 3 a.m, and the night I saw it, I just went home and I had all the lights on, and at 3 a.m, I was like, okay, evil does not seem to be here. I think I can sleep. I'm good. That movie fucked me up.
That is a scary movie.
I think the horror films that are kind of anchored in some kind of reality are the ones that tend to stick with me the most, I think, more than the kind of paranormal scares. That's why I enjoyed Hostel. You know, and I know it's a gore fest, but I think that the idea, it starts with that, it's almost like American Pie at the beginning. It's the two guys, they're stoned, they're in Amsterdam, they're travelling around, they're looking for boobs, you know, it's kind of like some American lazy teen thing. But how it turns nasty is absolutely inspired. And I mean, the scariest thing about that film, by the way, I rewatched it in preparation for this and I thoroughly enjoyed it, is that whole wide leg jean bootcut thing that was going on in 2005. Because I know there's a few pictures of me out there wearing those. And every time I was like, oh, I didn't, did I?
Isn't it weird that it still operates on that same Puritan theory that the original Halloween does, where these guys get killed and suffer these awful things? I mean, to talk about scenes that are burned into your brain,
the bit
where they slash across his Achilles tendons is horrific.
Well, how he unshackles him first and says, we'll just walk out the door. But he's done that. And I mean, my goodness.
But it's that thing, like, you know, they're being bad boys, so they get punished. But Hostel is, Hostel, Eli Roth, you called it a gore fest. I think after Cabin Fever, this is when the whole torture porn thing began again.
Gorno.
Where we were treated to horrific, visceral images of flesh being torn apart as horror.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you like a Hostel and not its superior sequel, Hostel Part 2? You don't like,
doesn't
you don't
that
like
feature
that?
Does it feature someone in that?
Wait, is there someone in that? Oh, wait
there
a second.
A drunk British tourist.
Wait a minute. Is it me? Am I in Hostel Part 2?
Are you in Hostel Part 2?
Oh my God. Yes, I am. I'm in Hostel Part 2.
Oh gosh.
This
briefly,
is brilliant news
I'm
to me.
Credited.
Okay.
In,
are you?
I'm in the credits of Hostel Part 2.
What, was that through Empire? Did you get involved there or were you just on holiday in?
I just happened to be.
I was looking for some
fun. I was looking for some boobs.
I've got cut jeans on.
And I wound up in Hostel Part 2.
I'll see your Hostel Part 2 and raise you Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, third zombie from the front chasing Ving Rhames into the elevator at the shopping mall. Yeah,
no
that's
way.
That's
amazing. Okay, that is impressive.
Yeah. But are you credited though?
I don't think I am, although...
Suck it, Sane.
Just to undo any credibility I did have, I'm also in Deuce Bigalow, European Gigolo.
Yes, you are!
Which
it's
I am
amazing.
Credited in. But not as me, as Dan Vanderhoek. Not even a funny name.
Alex, at the time, was going to change his name by Deepole to Zombie Third on the Left. So we could get the credit that he deserves.
That's right.
Alex, I described Deuce Bigalow 2 in Empire Magazine as the Godfather Part 2 of male gigolo movies. So
I think I remember reading that. Going, I wonder what they're saying about my film.
You're looking starring Rob Schneider and not Alex Zane. What a shame! But it's what a movie! Yeah. And actually, probably a good answer for the question is what's the scariest movie of all time? It's Deuce Bigalow.
But not from a horror perspective. is it? But to keep on the to get this back on track slightly,
Deuce Bigalow.
Talking of zombie movies, the idea that I find the reality in a horror film the scariest, that opening sequence of 28 Days Later. Where London's deserted and he's wandering around in the hospital gown, that's a scene that really stays with you.
I still flash back to that some days when you get up too early in London. It's like, fucking hell. It's scary, man. Living people are scary.
Yeah.
Having said that, one of the scariest films I've ever seen is totally unrealistic in every single way, but I think it has something that really works for me, which is that you give me something gross and scary and obviously bad at the beginning and then nothing for a long time, so I'm on edge the entire time.
Okay.
So that was Cube. I don't know if you've ever seen
that. Oh my God, Cube. That film screwed me up as well.
So basically, guy wakes up in a cube-shaped room, right, and there's a door in each wall and the ceiling and the floor, which connect to other identical cube-shaped rooms except they're different colors, right? So he starts kind of climbing from one room to the other, trying to figure out what the fuck, and he goes into this one room and basically lasers appear and dice him. And you're just like, what?
It's the scene from Resident Evil in the corridor done again. It's really good.
I think it was before. Free, and then other people wake up in other rooms and they gradually get
together. I was recommended The Cube recently.
Oh, man. So it scares me so much.
And also, the reason The Cube's good is not only these horrific deaths. Each room is booby-trapped in a different, awful way.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that it's the guy who you think is going to be the hero, and it's about these relationships, these people, and there's a guy who you're like, okay, this guy seems a bit mean, but he's the guy who's going to get
he's
them out.
Get us through
and
here.
Then, like, the way he switches, and you're like, oh, there's one thing he does in it where you're like, what did that? Did that just happen? It's awful.
It's awful.
The Cube is great. Yeah. I do like, for me, it's movies, horror movies that do that thing where they separate the protagonists in an isolated location somewhere. Yes. So it actually doesn't even have to be horror. Like the Name of the Rose does it really well. That monastery.
That's really creepy.
In The Name of the Rose. Obviously, the Overlook Hotel in Shining is another one. I actually even think The Nun does it well to talk about the Conjuring franchise and The Nun. Like that monastery, I mean, two things. First of all, Damien Bashir is brilliant, and that's great that he's in it. I love that monastery, and I love how scary it is. And of the two spin-offs from The Conjuring, I would take The Nun, a cross-dressing demon, over Annabelle. I think Annabelle's good, but I've seen photos of the real-life Annabelle, and she's not scary at all. She's a Raggedy Ann doll with like a stuffed Raggedy Ann doll with a smiley face.
Look at you baiting Annabelle. Are you mental?
You
ain't scary. You're just a little rag doll.
So the weird thing is, you talk about this sort of like the Lorraine Warren, those cases and this whole idea of horror having this thing in reality, no matter how much you sort of go, nah, it's just all, I don't really believe in the paranormal. The fact that, according to legend, a guy did bang on the Annabelle glass, because she's there in a case in their museum, and a guy banged on the glass and was like goading Annabelle, died 3 hours afterwards in a motorbike crash.
it's kind of weird because I'm an agnostic, but I'm drawn to films that have a supernatural bent and things that have kind of a religious theme as well, because I think it's terrifying to me if I'm wrong, basically. But also, the idea that there's something that can reach out and grab you at any time and possess you at any time. So I'm a big fan of possession films. So it's we haven't mentioned The Exorcist, for example.
Oh, I mentioned it just yesterday.
Oh, my God. Wow. It's, you know, we will summon Kermode. He will appear. He has been known to wander this building from time to time. So if we're talking about The Exorcist for too long, he will appear. But films like that, films like The Exorcism of Emily Rose, things that are, you know, things that have, The Omen, for example. The Omen is one of my favorite all-time horror films, and it revolves around the Antichrist and biblical revelations. Stuff like that really freaks me out.
I cannot believe you don't watch more Supernatural.
Literally 15 seasons, Helen. I'll get around to it.
Every single one of those elements. Mm.
Really? I've not watched Supernatural. Is it really good?
I really love it, but like... Okay. That,
with caveats.
But it is 15 seasons.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm looking for. Once I've finished what I'm watching at the moment, which isn't on Sky, so we'll remain nameless. I'll get onto that.
All right.
But for me, it's imagery. It's like, yes. I've said before, it's like if I think of a movie and I see one definite image from that movie, that's the thing that I go, oh my God, that really, if it's still there, it screwed me up. Like, you think about Gore Verbinski's remake of The Ring. I know for sure that every time I hear The Ring, the image of them pulling back that wardrobe door and seeing her twisted face in horror is always there. Always
or the climbing
there.
Out of the well through the TV is obviously the famous scene which is still... Yeah. Really frightening.
It's the bit where they pull back the door, though, and her face sort of rotted, and she's just got that... It's that look of terror that you're like... It just basically embeds in your mind how freaking scary thing is.
And those J-horror films in general have a really dark, almost nihilistic feel, where there is ultimately...
No hope.
Hope. There is no escape. There is no bargaining. There is no reasoning. It's the fucking Terminator of horror movies. which... Maybe it's also a horror movie, but you know what I mean. I think they're super, super scary.
With the films that have that ability, you can almost replay the bit over and over again in your mind. Is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where he slides the metal door open?
Oh, yeah.
And he hammer kills. I didn't have time to watch that because I was watching The Exorcist, so I just went on YouTube, just searched it out, just to remind myself of how it looked, so we could talk about it a little bit now. And the first thing that comes up is it's a GIF.
The
Leatherface hammer kill is available, kids, as a GIF. So send it to all your friends and family.
What
situation would you be in to send that to someone as a GIF?
It's a GIF. My wife's like, you're so old. I was going, no, I mean, look, it's a GIF.
Dave seems pretty angry today. I don't know what I've done. I got the Leatherface
GIF. When I get in, I'm going to hammer kill you. Go to your room.
Oh, my God, the Empire Podcast Massacre. Yeah. Brought to you by Dave Perry.
I just remembered something that I thought of when you mentioned the hamstrings earlier. One of the things that has scared me most in horror this century is Wolf Creek.
Oh,
God.
It's
the head on a stick.
Oh,
wow. That still freaks me the fuck out. If I never see that film again, it will be too soon.
Mm. Well, I mean, that epitomizes horror that's based in reality as well. Yeah, if that's the thing that scares you, I think it was you who said that, Dave. Yeah, that's a horrible movie. Just to go back to the Japanese horror, and weirdly, it's the remake that really did it for me. I actually think, although it wasn't well received, The Grudge with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I love The Grudge.
So terrifying, and it's about the atmosphere and that whole atmosphere of not only being tormented by these spirits but being in this alien like environment, which is Japan, sort of doubles down on how alone she is in that situation.
Yep. It's the noise the spirit makes when it's near.
It's calling across the ceiling.
Oh my god.
Can we talk about one of the great sci-fi horrors? We've done Alien, we've done The Thing. Frickin' Event Horizon is so, so good. Do you know what the most upsetting thing I find in life is? The fact that there is a 2.5 hour, 2 hour, 10 minute director's cut of that movie that is so disgustingly gory that people fainted at the screenings, that the studio made him cut down because A, of the gore, and B, they wanted to rush it out. And the footage, and this is where it becomes its own little fucking horror movie, the footage was stored in a salt mine in Transylvania, and it wasn't stored properly, so it rotted away. So we will never, ever get to see the 2 hour, 10 minutes of Event Horizon, you know, which is upsetting.
I've still never seen Event Horizon, but it's been on my planner to watch. But, and the reason I just interjected was because every time we do one of these podcasts together, somehow you guys, and last time it was with James and not Helen, you end up talking about Event Horizon. I've got to watch it.
No, so good. What's hilarious is, like, basically every cast member of Event Horizon has a very good career, and they all come up in other movies, and we end up interviewing them reasonably, almost everybody, and we end up interviewing them reasonably often, and every single time poor Sam Neill or Jason Isaacs in here, they get Event Horizon questions, and you can see them literally be like,
Sean Pertwee,
I haven't prepared for this.
Yeah.
Why would I prepare to talk about Event Horizon?
I am contractually bound to talk to Sam Neill about Event Horizon every single time.
Jason Isaacs in that movie, though. I got it wrong. I thought it said Liberate Me, save us. But it says Liberate Tutta Me, save yourselves.
He's so good. He sells it so well. Yeah. And he's doing an Irish accent for some reason. And no one ever asks why. But it's so good.
Hey, Irish people are allowed to go to space, all right?
Of course they are, yeah.
I've got that on my T-shirt. My mum's from County Mayo.
That's awfully big up there, isn't it? You're terribly scary up there. I wouldn't go up there if I were you. Yeah, it's so good.
Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, Michael Fassbender. I wouldn't go up there if I were you. I'd race cars instead for a living. It's so... oh my god, Event Horizon. We mentioned earlier on the idea of films that stay with you and keep you awake. Event Horizon, I'm not... people will laugh. Gave me nightmares for 2 straight weeks. Mm-hmm. And I saw it at university and a flatmate... listen, there are better films out there. There are films that are more technically perfect. There are films that may even be scarier. I don't think there are, but it fucked me up for 2 straight weeks. And my flatmate and I were obsessed with that film, to the point where he started to produce a series of comic books, one-page cartoon strips called The Continuing Adventures, spoiler Dave, by the way, of Dr. Weir and Captain Miller in Hell, that all ended up with Dr. Weir going, well, we're going, we about need eyes. And it's so good, and it stayed with me forever. And every time I talk to someone from that movie who was even just tangentially connected to it, I have to talk their ear off for 5 to 10 minutes. It's so good. It's so creepy and unsettling. And it's a great combination, like Halloween is, of those short, sharp jump scares, but also stuff that really gets under your skin.
So I watched Halloween 2 nights ago and then watched the new Tarantino last night. And something about the combination gave me freaky ass dreams all last night, and it was really upsetting. But I kept seeing, basically in the background of like interesting cool 60s stuff in the Tarantino, Michael Myers just like sitting up.
Oh wow!
And getting up, and I'm scary. Like, yeah.
No, you don't want that.
I'm
dreaming that.
Yeah, but thank you for mentioning Event Horizon.
No, I love that movie. I remember that the video where the ship's in hell and they find the video. I think it's called the Blood Orgy is what it's been described as. But like, apparently in the footage that we will never see, that goes on for ages and is even more horrific. Because I've stopped it to try and see what is going on in that video because it's so awful and grotesque.
Yeah. I've heard you guys talk about Event Horizon so much that without even seeing it, I'm pretty sure I do well on Mastermind. What's your special subject? Event Horizon.
Yes. Where does it take place? On the Event Horizon. There you go.
They go to hell.
Why is Sam Neill's dead wife so scary? Because she pops up in air vents with no eyes.
No eyes. No eyes.
Yeah. Do you say? Do you say? It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, it is.
Even the opening shot, which has had sort of 720 revolve of the space station, that disorients you right from the off, and it's so freaky and cool and super creepy. And it may be my answer for the film, because it's all subjective. What is the scariest film of all time? And again, there are probably better films. And there are certainly better horror films. Mm. But it's a film that most scared me and unsettled me and still does.
And Sean Pertwee as Smitty is so good. Like when he finds the bomb and the expression on his face when he realizes he's too late and he's going to die. Spoiler?
What do you mean spoiler in a questioning tone? How dare you use a questioning tone when delivering that sentence?
I'm helping you with your quiz. I'm helping you when you're in the quiz.
He can't defuse the bomb. He's going to die. It's a spoiler.
But he does this great expression where it's just like, oh.
It's great. So good. This ship is fucked. Also, so good. So good. So that may be my answer for what the scariest film of all time is. Alex, what's yours?
It's not really a film. It is a film now, but it was a mini series, a TV movie that was split into 2 parts. I think you're going to know what it is. Nothing has ever scared me more than Tim Curry as Pennywise the Clown in It.
Agreed.
I was terrified of dogs anyway. And people go, so what's the scariest scene in there? And it's the bit where Pennywise appears with this really long neck, and the jail guard, the hospital guard, looks up, and at the top of this neck is a Rottweiler's head, and just goes
wearing that kind of clown. Pardon me, it's not a joke here. Wearing a ruff.
It is actually wearing a ruff. Yeah. I mean, come
Thank
on,
you.
Clowns and scary dogs. It's
not good. That's not good.
And while we're here talking about scary stuff, and we're on the subject of Stephen King adaptations, Shawshank Redemption's terrifying, isn't it? My God. No, that amazing shot in Salem's Lot, which is also a miniseries, a kind of, you can count as a movie because they put it together for TV. And that shot of the little vampire kid at the window.
At the window.
Scratching at the window.
Really, yeah. I think
David
Salem's
Saul
Lot.
Being a badass.
Yeah. I think Salem's Lot is underrated. I think Salem's Lot should be a movie. I'd like to see that, but also that's one of the books that really freaked me out, because it's that slow creeping spread of vampirism through this small town is just really unsettling.
I mean, I guess it's almost a cliche to mention it, but I you know, we haven't mentioned The Shining really, and that is truly one of the scariest horror movies. And I know Stephen King doesn't like Stanley Kubrick's version. I think as recently as like when he released Doctor Sleep, he was still going, this is a sequel to the book, not the Stanley Kubrick movie.
Let it go, King.
Some people seem to think it's scary, and you're like, yeah, it's terrifying. But in his defense, I read The Shining for the first time quite recently, the book, and I do think it's not the best adaptation. You can see why Stephen King is a bit funny about it, because it was a very personal book. It's about alcoholism. He was dealing with that at the time. And the movie sort of pictures Jack Torrance as kind of a bit evil from the get-go. There's very little good in Jack Nicholson's performance in that movie.
Yeah, so. I think that's fair.
But Danny scooting around in isolated hotel corridors is one of the scariest moments ever.
It's impossible not to think of when you're in a Holiday Inn or a Premier Inn or wherever else you guys stay.
On a scooter.
Do you know what? I was in Yosemite National Park, and I went to the Awani Hotel, which is one of the inspirations for the interior of the Overlook, and I did have a couple of moments of like, because I was just looking at one point, there's these lift doors and they're literally red with the kind of beautiful gold surrounds and everything. Yeah. And I'm a bit like, not feeling too comfortable.
It's on my to-do list to go to the Timberline Lodge in Oregon, which is obviously used as the exteriors for the Overlook. Although there's no room 237, there is a room 217 from the book. And apparently there's been some ghostly goings on. I wonder if that helps with tourism, but let's just assume it's real and not some kind of scam. Do you like the fact that the Shining is basically? You've obviously seen Room 237. That documentary, the bit where they go on about the moon landings and how Stanley Kubrick basically was the guy who filmed fake moon landings, and how the Shining is his apology for it,
and like, he's studded stuff all the way through.
Yeah, he's got Danny in the Apollo 11 jumper.
It's a very cute jumper.
I believe we went to the moon, but then I saw that, and because I'm very naive and easily swayed, I was like, nope, Stanley Kubrick filmed it.
I also think Paul McCartney died in 1967, whatever it was. I think he's been replaced by a doppelganger ever since. Oh, doppelgangers, they're scary. Dave, you have not answered the question. What is the scariest movie of all time?
I'm going to go with The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That's a brilliant choice.
Mm. Purely because, well, not purely because, but I think it's anchored in that reality that I was discussing earlier. It's got the isolation, which I can't remember if it's Helen or Alex, you said that's people being isolated. Mm. And I think that there's the hammer kill where the door suddenly opens and there's all the grotesqueness of the hooks and stuff. But it's just also that bit where, whilst looking for help, you stumble across the family and you think, we have salvation, someone's going to understand. And then all of a sudden you're at their family banquet and you realise they're all in it together.
Yeah.
And when I first saw that movie, it kind of brought all of the elements of things I still find scary to this day into the world of horror. So I'm going to go with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Good choice. The dinner table sequence.
Yeah.
My God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really scary. Awful.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, the Michael Bay version is kind of better, but... I'm joking, obviously. I'm joking.
Wow.
You said the word doppelgangers there, and the Drew Barrymore movie Doppelganger is pretty scary. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that.
I have not.
It's a left-field choice, Alex, but... Let's go with it. Is that your official? Is that your answer? Your official answer is anything with Drew Barrymore in it, but especially Juice Bigelow, European Gigolo.
Even riding in cars with boys, terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
Never been kissed. That's a terrifying concept, isn't it?
Charlie's Angels really shit me up as well.
And on that bombshell. a good note on which to end, I think. We haven't even mentioned things like George Romero's. I mentioned it briefly, but George Romero's zombie trilogy.
Yeah, which I find the Dead trilogy pretty freaking scary. Yeah. It just seems a little bit too credible.
I was also in George Romero's Land of the Dead.
Oh, for the love of God.
Sorry.
There's no way that he can prove any of this true, by the way.
You brought it up. It's weird because like we were doing it in Toronto and it was really, really cold at night. And the scene was about 30 seconds long and they didn't have the budget to CGI out breath. So for the entire 30 seconds as we were stumbling forward, they were like, just make sure you hold your breath because obviously you're dead. And, you know, as a smoker, 30 seconds seemed like a lifetime.
You had four to go afterwards. God, I need it.
It really did ruin the film to see you with an inhaler.
My God.
But I'm in the bit at the start, just fans.
Can everyone else just step back from the mic? Sorry, Alex.
Oh, I've seen this on Pornhub, actually. Which is a website I've just guessed. I just guessed that URL.
There are other porn sites available. I'm in the bit at the start where the zombies, where they're raiding the town and they fire the fireworks to distract us and all the zombies look at the fireworks. And when the zombies that looks up, like a stupid zombie, oh, fireworks, great. So yeah, that's my bit.
That's really cool, man. Yeah.
Do you look at the camera?
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you look directly at the camera and go,
I give the tiniest thumbs up to the camera, mate.
Yeah, and then go, I'm Alex
Sane. And I approve this film.
Always a giveaway.
You might recognise me from other films like Juice Bigelow.
At one point during the take for Hostel Part 2, I did look directly at the camera and they had to stop and go again.
Chris, really?
Putting the movie massively over.
I didn't think I was in shot. And the AD comes, he was a very forbidding check. A guy comes over, you were in shot. Do not do that again. And I'm like, oh God, Jesus. But yeah, and it got cut out another part of the movie as well.
That's also, that sounds like how James Cameron directs everyone in the movie. You're in shot. Don't do that again.
Slower, less intense.
Shut up, Kate. Shut up, Leo. Just cry and run around Titanic.
Listen to me!
Anyway. I can know there's enough room on the door for two people!
Okay, right, time to bring this bad boy home then. All right, because that is all the time we have, I'm afraid. But if this has got you all stoked up to see any of the films we talked about, particularly the ones that have Alex in them, or me, you know, I actually get credited. If you go on IMDb, there I am, drunk British slob. That's me.
Is that what you get credited as?
Yeah.
That's because you look at the camera.
You had a big part in the movie. You were hero of movie. Now you're drunk British slob.
You're going to have much bigger part, but no, drunk British slob is you.
Then check out the Halloween collection. There you will find all kinds of excellent scary films. So they've got the first four Alien movies on there. They've got Hostel. Dave, they've got Hostel.
Yes, I love Hostel.
There we go. They got John Carpenter's The Thing. The first three Omen movies, Event Horizon. Oh, Alex.
No, right. Leave it.
Scariest movie ever.
Wait a second, they've got Bram Stoker's Dracula. That's amazingly scary, just from an accent point of view.
I know where the bastard sleeps.
Listen to the children of the night, like beautiful music I might.
Wait a minute, that's the guy who directed me on Hostel Part 2.
It's Gary Oldman in character.
That's so amazing. That hair.
My God. What else they got? They got The Nun, they got Annabelle, they got Overlord, which is really, if you haven't seen it, really kick-ass. So good. They got The Shining. Now, is it the Kubrick version or the McGarris version? I'm not entirely sure. I'm pretty sure it's a Kubrick.
It's Stephen King reading the book.
Most terrifying of all.
This is how it should have been all along. Chapter one.
And they've got the first eight Friday the 13th movies, which means that it culminates in Jason Takes Manhattan and Jason Voorhees literally punching someone's head off. So something for everyone there, whether you want to watch Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers or some other mass maniac. And you can visit sky.com/skycinema. for details on how to subscribe. And all that remains for me now is to say farewell to Alex Sane.
Goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Alex. We'll talk later about Lizard and the Blizzard, by the way.
Yes, I'm absolutely in.
Very much on board with you being on board.
Thanks very much.
It's goodbye and farewell from Dave Berry.
Thanks, everybody. It's quite ominous that during this chat, my apple has rotted to just a core.
How long have we been in here?
I have no idea.
What year is it?
It's farewell from Helen O'Hara. The children of the night. What music they make.
That was the only line I remember from Dracula as well, damn it.
Do you not remember, I'm Dracula? That was quite a big one.
Was that really a line? Literally, yeah. I'm Dracula.
I am Dracula, yeah.
But you didn't say it like you usually say it. I'm Dracula.
Dracula, yeah, no. Another time.
You had one line in movie, I'm Dracula, and you said Dracula?
Lazy slob with fangs, we'll put him as that.
You had one job, now you have no job. Anyway, we meet again, I am off to check for that noise in the basement, and I'm sure it's nothing. And if you've been scared by any of the events in this podcast, then just keep repeating, it's only a podcast, it's only a podcast, it's only a podcast. Or is it? Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.